We'll move to the third case of the morning. This is Young Zhang versus Alberto Gonzalez. Mr. McCullough.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Counsel. This case is really the central issue in this case is how it's framed. Saying the case is not about credibility doesn't change anything. And let me point to the testimony immediately before the immigration judge's comments about the photograph. We raised an issue about our comments, but immediately before this, the government attorney, Joseph Yang, asked about the children in front of the broken wall. He said that these are my two kids. He asked when when were the photographs taken? It was taken in 2002. They were standing in the kitchen place of the damaged home.
Mr. McCullough, before you get too much further on this, as I understood the government's brief, they are willing to say, yes, the immigration judge made a favorable credibility finding on behalf of your client, but as I see it, the real focus here is on whether countries can fine people for what's, of course, a very terrible population control policy. And the house was destroyed because of failure to pay the fine, which is one step removed. Now, the fine itself was imposed because of the population control, but immigration judge Gian Bastiani looks at the fine and says imposing a fine on somebody is really not the same thing as sterilizing them or compelling them to have an abortion or doing other things of a greater magnitude.
That's what she said.
And see, that is a matter of law. That gets us beyond this credibility dispute. She believes everything that Mr. Zhang has said. He violates the rules. He gets fined. But at the end of the day, his children are living there with his wife, with the in-laws. They're paying a higher tuition because they're sort of out-of-area students, but they're living peacefully in China. And as the government kind of notes in a footnote, how he cannot be able to pay a 3,000 renminbi fine, and yet he can come up with $60,000 for the snakehead is a little odd. But if we focus on the fine, as the judge did, then this may not be a case that satisfies.
I don't think the focus is on the fine, and we never
argued.
Why not? We didn't argue that the fine was the cause of constituted persecution.
But
we
the judge that- says what happened to you, though. I mean, in a sense, she sees it, is that the legal regime in Fujian province has backed off a bit, and even though they have laws designed to discourage having children, you just get fined, as opposed to more drastic measures being taken.
Mr. Zhang didn't just get fined. He got his home destroyed. And she found in the oral decision that there was not a sufficient nexus between the non-payment of the fine and the destruction of the home. I submit that that's error.
Well, if he paid the fine, your position certainly is if he had paid the 3,000 renminbi fine, the home wouldn't have been destroyed.
That seems to be the case, but...
So why doesn't that make non-payment of the fine the reason for the destruction of the home?
Well, the non-payment of the fine is tied together with the violation of the family planning laws. It's not a fine for driving without a license plate. It's a fine for something that is protected under our immigration laws.
But where did you argue here that what he is complaining about is what the statute refers to as other resistance to a coercive population control program?
I believe I argued that Mr. Zhang testified that he could not pay the fine when it was imposed, and that the village officials threatened him. They threatened to destroy his home if he didn't pay the fine. And approximately 1 month later, they came out to collect the fine. He didn't have the money to pay it, and they began smashing up his home. I don't know how closer you could have a nexus between the violation of the family planning laws and the acts of destruction of the home.
If he were going to be fined for something else, you mentioned something about driving without a license. It was right. Something more extreme where he didn't pay a fine. It had nothing to do with the family planning stuff. And they threatened that if you don't pay the fine, I don't know what these local bureaucrats do, but they obviously are fairly coercive. If you don't pay the fine, we're going to destroy your house. What is it? It's, you say, well, that's not because I wouldn't pay the fine. It's because I didn't have the license or something. Is that, you just ignore the fact that the fine would resolve it and say that it's because of the family planning or whatever. Now, there's also some fear of sterilization and that sort of thing, but that's speculative.
That's later, but...
The fine is the only thing at hand, and you're saying it goes passes through the fine and goes to the policy.
It has to. It's that's why she was fined. His wife was fined. It was because of the policy. She had the second child. She was fined for having the first child before they were legally married, underage.
If your client had paid the fine, and they went away, would you have the same claim?
Would I? No.
Why not?
I'm not claiming that payment of the fine is persecution under the statute. I'm saying that the persecution is the home destruction or non-payment of the fine. It's a very extreme.
You calling this economic persecution? Is that what you're
Yes,
really
I do. I cited the Borka case, and I cited the case Lee versus Ashcroft that relied on Borka. And... I don't know how much closer you can have a nexus. To say it's too attenuated, what would be not too attenuated? Look at it logically. What would be? How close can you get? You have an act which is a violation of the family planning laws of China, and you have a fine imposed for that act. You have a threat, and then you have. Threat carried out. They're all connected.
Well, suppose, I mean, it seems to me, I don't see this developed in the record, but suppose it were necessary in his region of China to obtain a license from the local government to open a bakery or something like that. I mean, it's not uncommon that you have to have some sort of business license. And he doesn't get the license, and he opens the bakery, and so they come along and fine him for not having a license. I take it it's your position that actually they would not destroy his home for non-payment of that fine, but they would destroy his home for non-payment of a fine about family planning? Is that the argument?
I really don't have a position on that because I don't know that what the answer would be for that.
Because it seems to me that's actually, that would get to the nexus that you're talking about. It would suggest that only in the family planning area are such drastic measures taken and other fines, you know, say not getting a license for your bakery, don't carry that kind of extremely brutal and punitive response.
I don't know how one could put that into the record in an immigration trial. I didn't try this case. I took it over an appeal.
Well, but, thank you.
I just, look, my question is, and I answer in the affirmative, that... there is a nexus. It's very tight. They've said what they would do, and they did it, and they said why they did it. The fine, I don't argue that the fine itself constitutes persecution, but I do argue that the destruction of the home does. And I don't know. The record doesn't show whether or not the destruction of the home was a legal act in China or not. I suspect it wasn't. I suspect it was village officials getting out of hand. There are very few cases on this issue. My research shows very few cases, and that's probably why, because if they come up, the petitions are granted, the asylum applications are granted. I see my time is running. I'd like to reserve some.
You can reserve the rest.
Reserve it for
yes,
the
you want to reserve the right. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I wasn't looking at
you.
No.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Counsel. Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is John Amaya, here on behalf of the respondent, the Attorney General of the United States. Our position is that the evidence does not compel reversal of the immigration judge's denial of asylum or the board's affirming the order because petitioner failed to prove that he suffered past persecution or has well-founded fear of future persecution on account of the fines, damage to the home, IUDs, or China's coercive birth control policies.
Now, can there be any doubt, though, that the destruction of the home, as Mr. McCullough was saying in the waning moments of his argument, was because of the population control violations? They told him that. So it's in the record, and the judge said she believed him. So why isn't that punishment for resistance to the birth control policies?
Well, Your Honor, the judge and the board agreed that what happened here is that the petitioner failed to show a nexus between the harm and the protected grounds.
But doesn't that fly in the face of the evidence in the record that the judge credits? The judge says, you know, your second birth is an act, or Zhang says, they told me your second birth is an act in violation of the birth control policy. And they said, give us the money. He says, I don't have it. They say, okay, and they start swinging axes and demolishing his house. I mean, if the judge is going to credit that testimony, how can there possibly not be a nexus? This is not the house that Jack built. This is, you know, they're standing there. You violated the birth control, you know, population control, whatever you want to call it, and boom, you know, they start destroying his house.
No, I agree.
Nothing
I agree.
Remote about that.
No, it's very clear, and the government concedes that the reason why the damage to the home occurred was because of the petitioner's failure to obey the law in China.
And the law he failed to obey was the birth control policy.
Correct.
And so why isn't that, you know, look, if our government came in and bulldozed people's homes, you know, because they didn't get a license for something, we would regard that as an act of unbelievable inappropriateness. It's a brutal, terrible thing to do to somebody, and there's no evidence that that it has anything to do but punishing people who refuse to abide by the population control rules.
I agree, Your Honor. It is reprehensible. However, our position is that we have a waiver argument in that petitioner failed to argue that in their opening brief.
Of course, your opponent suggests that he did, in fact, in a general sense, make that argument. It may not have been as focused as it has become at this stage, but he certainly was resisting the coercive. Certainly, you're not contesting that it's a coercive population control regime in Fujian.
No, Your
province.
Honor, we're just arguing that he did not argue within the particular carve out that Congress created the other resistance prong to get him into persecution. Excuse me, on account of his political opinion. That's the government's position.
But what did the judge? I mean, hard for me to see how that couldn't have been his argument, though. I mean, he's never argued that his wife was forced to have abortions. He's never argued that they tried and somehow failed to sterilize either one of them, right? He's saying they resisted.
No, there's nothing in the record to indicate that they tried to sterilize them.
He has a different part of his argument, I recognize, is if he were to be sent back, then one or the other of them would be sterilized.
He argues that, and
that's
in his,
just
in
a
his testimony,
point. Yeah.
Correct. And in his testimony, he asserted that he had fear, well-founded fear, of being sterilized upon return, and the evidence that he submitted to that end indicated nothing about sterilization, which he alleged it did, which was the notice sent to his spouse requiring her to do follow-up checkups.
Right, the forced IUDs, which are troublesome, but I don't want to focus on that right now. I want to get back to his past persecution arguments, which I understand to be different from this. If I go back in the future, something will happen to me. Well, and the past persecution arguments is that he and his wife repeatedly violated the population control measures, and as a result, his house gets razed or destroyed. And I take it the government's position is that doesn't count as persecution.
Well,
even though you just agreed in this argument that there's a very close link between his violation of the population control measures and the razing of the house.
Well, sure. He ended up getting damage to the home as a result of his failure to pay the fine, which stemmed from his violating the family planning laws. That said, we have not been able to find any case law which indicates that home damage alone rises to the level of persecution.
Damage or home destruction?
Home destruction on account of these family planning laws. And we've looked at various case law where there have been issues of forced sterilization, forced abortion in conjunction with home destruction, where officials came into the home, physically carried off the spouse to force an abortion or a sterilization. And we find that the facts in this case are far from that situation. And we contend that because courts haven't concluded on that, and in addition to our waiver argument, petitioner hasn't proven the nexus nor his eligibility for asylum on account of persecution due to his political opinion. So our position is that he has waived the issue of fines and the home damage on account of other resistance, because he, first and foremost, in his opinion, he failed to demonstrate the nexus. The furthermore, in some of the cases which have been cited to on account of economic persecution,
how do you think he could have, if you'd been representing him, how would a person in his position the next time around, in light of all this, show the nexus between home destruction? I take it it's not good enough for the officials to say out loud, the reason we're destroying your home is because you haven't followed the birth control rules. So how do you show the nexus?
On account of economic persecution?
No. He's there, a case like his. He doesn't, a person, a man, doesn't follow the birth control policies. And the officials show up at his home, and they say, we're going to destroy your home because you didn't follow the birth control policies. And your position is that's not enough to show a nexus. So I want to know, what additional evidence does the government expect somebody to be able to introduce?
We're saying he didn't argue it, Your Honor. He didn't argue it. That's why we're saying that there is no...
He didn't argue that there was a nexus between the house destruction and the birth control?
But he didn't argue the other resistance prong.
But he did argue that there was a nexus between the destruction of the home and the birth control policy. And the statute does say opposition to coercive population control measures counts as, quote-unquote, political opinion. Right?
Yes.
Are we supposed to ignore the statute?
No, Your Honor. We're not supposed to ignore the statute, but it's petitioner's burden to prove that, A, he was persecuted, B, on one of the five grounds.
And he's kind of given us the facts and not the label.
Correct.
And so why can't we look at the label and apply it properly?
Because it's upon him to argue it.
You're going on waiver, apparently.
Yes.
And just because they didn't articulate it, because it was, obviously we have had other cases where the sterilization or the forced abortion, and some, they doubt whether it's true or not, and had a certificate and all kinds of stuff where we've gone through before. What do you really need? Here, apparently what you're saying is you first have to argue what other resistance, other than what?
I'm sorry?
Other than what? Other Resistance. Resistance based on?
Resistance to the coercive family planning program. And here...
Is resistance not paying a fine?
Arguably, but that too has not been argued here.
Well, see, your footnote 13 sort of discounts a lot of stuff, saying, well, these are interesting questions, but they really haven't been presented, I guess. I'm not sure what that footnote means, but you refer to the IUD and sterilization and that sort of thing. All things that the IUD, forced IUD, is arguably a form of at least temporary sterilization and forced, and obviously the follow-up could be, if all that doesn't work, then you get the real thing. I don't know. I mean, this whole thing is difficult for us to sit here with trying to even work around some policy like this. But it's the government's position is you've got to do something other than what they did here.
Correct.
But there seems to be an opening that, had they argued this case correctly, it would be successful with the same facts.
Possibly a board and the IJ could find economic persecution under these circumstances, but even if he and I see I've run out of my time.
Finish up.
But our position is that even if he does hurdle the waiver issue, the harms in the aggregate do not amount to economic persecution, where in prior cases, entire home destruction, blacklisting from employment, all government employment and most legitimate employment, food rations being taken away, tuition opportunities being taken away. Those issues weren't present here. The petitioner was able to register both children. Petitioner wasn't forced to ever pay the second fine. The fine that was imposed upon the spouse for not showing up to her required checkup hasn't been enforced. She hasn't been sought after. Petitioner, furthermore, had his children in school, registered in a different district, and as a result was paying higher tuition. And furthermore, he was gainfully employed the whole time that he was there in China prior to smuggling himself out to the United States. And his wife was also working.
So saying he could live and let live, didn't have to come over here and participate.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And he himself indicated, with respect to the whole re-registration, because he had moved from his prior residency to the new residency with his in-laws, and he was asked about the requirement that China imposes on having to re-register, and he said, they usually don't enforce this, so I'm not terribly worried.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Thanks.
And in closing, we ask that the court affirm the board. Thank you.
I'll give you a couple of minutes. We dragged this on a little bit. If you've got something more to add.
First of all, we did not ignore the statute. I cited it in my opening brief, and the statute says, other resistance to coercive population control shall be deemed to have been persecuted on account of political opinion. Secondly, the whole issue of whether or not it is persecution was argued in the government's brief, so there's no prejudice. Even if there was a waiver, which I claim there wasn't, I cited Ma versus Ashcroft in page 4 of my reply brief. Second point, the forced assertion of a IUD on a woman's body, this court dealt with in Zing versus Gonzalez, 409 Fed 3rd 804, in 2005, and this court remanded it to the Board of Immigration Appeals for determination of whether or not that constitutes persecution under the statute. The government has said and basically agrees that this case should be remanded. The credibility of this petitioner is not in doubt. He did testify that happened, so that gives another ground for remanding this case.
Well, the credibility determination is, I understand what the judge said, but there's some questions about it because she did question that photograph and whether that actually depicted the home or not.
Well, That's just an unexplained part of the oral decision, really, because he did. When I opened my argument here, I cited his testimony in which he said, "That's my house where I used to live." He's talking about the photograph. If he's credible there, then the photograph has to be accepted. The judge said that he's totally credible. So it doesn't square at all. There's no explanation of that discrepancy at all.
And okay.
So thank you very much. I'd ask that this case the decision be vacated and remanded to the Board of Immigration Appeals.
Okay. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.